listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. This show exists to help you build a thriving creative career. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. You can stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's get into the show. This episode is sponsored by AstroPad. AstroPad is an app that turns your iPad into a professional graphics tablet for your Mac. It works with any Mac app, so you can use creative tools like Photoshop and Illustrator right on your iPad, just like I do. Check out astropad.com to learn more. This week's episode is also brought to you by Wix.com. With Wix, the web is your playground. Start with a blank page and design any website you want. Work right on the web page with advanced features and sophisticated visual effects. You'll have the freedom to tell your story exactly the way you envisioned it. Get to wix.com/creativepep to get started today. That's wix.com/creativepep. Wix, what will you create? Quick announcements before we get into the show. First thing is I signed up to Vero. Maybe it's Vero. I don't know what it is, but it's a new platform, new social media. You know, I don't know if it's going to stick around, but I wanted to check it out. I wasn't excited to do so, to be completely honest, but I've dug my teeth into it, and I'm having a good time, actually. Two reasons. One, it's got a chronological feed. I'm not hardcore. I'm not one of those people that's upset about the algorithm on Instagram, but I do prefer a chronological feed. The other thing I think is cool about Vero is that you can share your book recommendations and your music recommendations, and I'm going to be doing both of those things on there, especially books, because I think that's relevant to the Creative Pep Talk audience. Just finished up a book called I'm about to finish up a book called Emotional Intelligence 2.0. You can go check out what I was thinking about that book and also recommend some books on that platform. You can just search my name, Andy J. Pizza, and follow me on there. All right. Another thing, calendars, 2018 calendars. I think by the time this goes out, they will be completely sold out. Thank you guys for coming out and supporting the show. Super happy with how those turned out, and I'm looking forward to doing a 2019 calendar, God willing. Today on the show, we have Jemma Carell for round two. Jemma Carell was coming into my town, and I'm going to try to get her on the show as many times as I possibly can because I'm a crazy fan. She exemplifies all of the Creative Pep Talk principles. And actually, I wanted to get her on here right after the last episode to give us a little break in our Creative Career Path series, because last episode we were all talking about getting good, defining good, and I asked Jemma what her definition of good comics are, good cartoons, and she had tons of good things to say about it. So I feel like she was perfect to place in this part of the series. And, you know, the other reason I want her on as much as possible is because she's just been a friend, an online friend, and an in-person friend a few times, but she's been an online friend since the beginning of my journey, and she's always been so lovely. And I remember even back in the day, she probably doesn't even remember, but early, like this must have been like 2007 when we were both either in school or about to graduate. And we were both doing some contests, some design illustration contest when this was kind of a more normal thing over in the UK. And I don't know if you were existing back then online, but trolls were actually more rampant in a way. They were more common. Maybe they weren't as gross, but they were all over the place. And so even on these design contests, you just had so many people coming out of the woodwork just trashing your design. And I remember Jemma sent me a message about my design saying that she thought it was really good and that not to listen to these trolls. And that was so nice, and I still remember it. So thanks, Jemma. You're going to love this episode. I wanted to talk to her about some of the things I talked to her about last time and get some updated answers, but also some new territory as well. And this is one of my favorite interviews. You're going to love it. I should say real quick, I mean, I'm assuming you know who she is. She's got 500,000. She just hit 500,000 followers on Instagram. So I'm guessing you probably follow her if you're into this kind of scene. If not, go follow her. She's one of my favorite people to follow there. At Gemma Carell, G-E-M-M-A-C-O-R-R-E-L-L. She is a fantastic illustrator. She just did a big campaign for the Amazon Echo, but she's probably best known for her for being a cartoonist. She is super hilarious and does all kinds of stuff with pugs. She did a super popular shirt called that said "Pugs Not Drugs" on it. You probably saw that somewhere. Anyway, that's a little bit about her. Without further ado, for real this time, here's Gemma Carell. My first question is a softball question. It's not actually about softball. It's an easy question.
Okay, because that would be a hard question for me.
What is something, how long have you been living in the U.S.?
I've been here about 2.5 years now.
And how many times have you been back?
I've been back to the UK once.
Okay.
Since I've been here.
So what are the things that you miss the most?
Well, my friends and family.
Other than that, that's the cop-out answer.
Other than that, I miss Indian food.
Yes.
And I miss chips from the fish and chip shop.
Yeah. There's nothing like that here.
No, it's the way they fry them, and I think the potatoes themselves.
Yes.
I did miss Iron Brew, but then I went to Jungle Gyms in Cincinnati, and they had Iron Brew.
True. So did you just have it?
Yes.
Awesome. I actually feel like I was just talking to my brother, my little brother. He was talking about Epcot at Disney World. And Epcot to me is like just a giant Jungle Gyms, basically.
Right. Like, yeah. That is basically what it is.
Yeah. We're like, yeah, okay. And that's, I guess you can pay, $170 to go to a Jungle Gyms.
Yeah.
Or just go to Jungle Gyms. Yeah. It's weird. What do you think, this is another just random question, but what do you think are the, from being here, you've been here long enough to get a little bit of a sense of Americans, what do you think is the biggest misconception about England and Britain? Like, do you run into misconceptions?
I think people hear a British accent and think that we're smart.
Not because I'm not laughing because you're not smart. Yeah. I laughed too hard there. That's not what I meant. But I do find that like when my wife starts talking, that people are like, "Oh, she's very sophisticated.
She must know what she's talking about." Yeah. And then I feel a lot of pressure to know what I'm talking about, and most of the time I don't.
Yeah, that's funny. I do think that that's true. So I don't think we talked a lot about this last time you were on the show. I wanted to see if you could tell us a little bit about what it was like to grow up, where you grew up. I know where you went to school. Mm-hmm. You went to Norwich.
Yeah.
Is that where you're from?
No, I'm from Ipswich, which is kind of between Norwich and London.
Right.
In Suffolk.
Okay. And do you think that there were things about your childhood with your family, growing up there that impacted the person that you became as a creative person and just generally?
Yes. Well, my family are not, nobody in my family is really in the creative professions. My uncle is an art teacher, but most of my family are either in the medical field or teaching. I had the average, I would say, amount of access to art and creativity. We had a lot of books at home, so I read a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
We had a great library in town. My school was very supportive of me as an artist. They quickly realized that I would do anything to get out of PE. would let me do, they'd be like, "Oh, we have this school fete coming up and we really need a poster for it." So
a school what? What is
a
it?
A fete.
What is that?
Like a fair.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, just a fancy word for fair.
Right.
So they would ask me to draw the poster, and then they'd be like, oh, well, we need it this morning, and that's when PE is.
That is so nice.
Might have to skip PE, and yeah.
Actually, when I was a kid, even though I love music, I don't know why, but did you guys have to learn the recorder?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I would fake sick on music days because I couldn't face it. I don't know if I just couldn't practice it, but I felt so sick and nervous, and I would just fake ill or go to the nurse's office. I couldn't do it. I hated it. I hated playing the
recorder. Yeah, recorders are not the most attractive sound when they're, you know, when there's 30 of them playing at the same time.
Yeah,
they do ocarinas now.
They do?
In the school I used to work at, they did ocarina instead of recorder, which is much nicer.
I would have been super into it just because I'm a crazy Zelda fan.
Right.
And I would have been like, this is amazing. That would have changed my whole childhood because I had all kinds of shame with, you know, lying to my parents. I'm like, oh, I can't go to school today and all that stuff. If they had only changed earlier, that would have been amazing. I wish I could play the ocarina now, actually. But anyway, that's a sidebar. Did you feel like, was there any, I mean, did you have a good family experience as a kid?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. It was very average kind of growing up. I was in a medium-sized town, had one brother, my parents.
Yeah. 1.2 brothers.
Yeah.
Average, yeah.
I had my grandmothers. My grandfathers both died when I was quite young. I had my cousins around. You know, it was just like regular old go to school at the week, go to church on Sunday, at the weekend maybe go to the park.
Yeah. Did you draw at church?
I actually did a monthly page for the church newsletter.
Oh.
It was called Bible Bill.
That's awesome.
And it was called Kids Corner with
okay.
a K. Kids
nice.
With a Z.
No.
Corner with a K.
My second question was it a Z at the end?
It was very much a Z.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, that's interesting. So did you would draw as a comic?
Yes, it was a comic, and I would put in puzzles and I would kind of vaguely allude to church business, of which I knew nothing, you know.
How old were you?
I was like, oh, I started doing it when I was about 8, and I kept doing it till I was about 14, and then my cousin took over.
You passed the torch to
yeah.
your cousin. So, and so was it printed?
Yes,
yeah.
It was, yeah.
So do you think that I mean, did that impact you? Do you think seeing your stuff like
yeah, for
in that
sure.
way, yeah.
yeah, having like seeing it and having people come up to me and talk about it, like, oh, I really like that coloring in you did, where it was like the characters from Friends saying stuff.
It was really
stuff. Yeah.
Oh, that is amazing.
It was the
90s. Oh my gosh, that is incredible. Do you have that stuff anymore?
I have. I don't have anything, but I the lady who ran the newsletter, we're still friends, so she's got the whole back catalog of Kids Corner. Yeah.
That's crazy. Kids Corner, did you make that up? Or did they already have that?
I made it up, but I feel like I probably got that from somewhere else.
Right, okay. Yeah, oh my gosh, that is amazing. And see, I actually think that I didn't have a lot of stuff like that when I was a kid, but I do feel like that impacts your decisions and what
mm-hmm.
you know, and even seeing, I feel like seeing your work printed, even in the most ordinary way, and reproduced and having people interact with it must have sparked some kind of thing like that. Like
yeah.
that's a thing you could do. Were you already into comics and stuff before that? I think you were
yes.
like your big Far Side fan.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was, I mean, we had the Far Side and we had Carl Giles. Those were what we had at home, so I read that a lot, the Far Side Annual.
Yeah.
And then, like, my brother got the Beano, and I got Bunty.
Right. And these are they British?
British
yeah,
comics,
okay.
yeah.
And actually, I feel like in England, there's, I mean, even just in Europe, there's a comics culture that doesn't exist for kids, especially here.
Yeah, it was just kind of something that everyone did. They got the weekly comic.
Yep.
You know, and it would come with a candy stuck on the front like a free gift.
Yeah.
So I tried to emulate that myself. So as well as Kids Corner, I also ran the Chatterbox, which was my primary school's comic.
I'm like eating this up. It's amazing.
I set it up and I was supposed to, some of my friends were supposed to contribute, but most of the time they didn't really want to. So I just did the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I was just so obsessed with magazines and comics and reading. And I was like, well, why can't I just do this myself? So I would draw everything up and then the school the school was so good to me, they would let me go in the office and photocopy the comic, and they would charge me like 2p or something.
Man.
And then I sold it for 20p.
Oh my gosh, you can have like right from the beginning. That is amazing.
I would go to the corner shop just up the road from school and I would buy penny sweets.
Yeah.
So like
which doesn't like exist here either. Yeah,
no, I mean it doesn't in England anymore either.
Right.
It's more like 10p sweets.
Right.
But I would buy those. I would sellotape them to the front. I would have competitions.
Awesome. So
I would have like a coloring competition, and then I would have to force people to enter. Mm. And then I would buy like a packet of like a whole packet of Smarties or something as the prize. And my school also had. There was like they set up this bank thing. So Barclays Bank is like one of the main British banks, and they came to our school to set us up with bank accounts as young as possible.
Did you say drug dealing to the kids? Like getting you stuck in your account?
And they would have this. Yeah. There was this cool money box that you would get when you opened an account. It was this eagle, like the Barclays logo. It was called Barclay Bill. And there was a plush eagle that was also a money box. And then they would also
did
run...
Barclays Bill, did that influence Bible Bill, possibly?
No, or was
that
Bill after? Was first.
Okay, so you maybe influenced them.
Yeah, maybe. Probably.
Yeah, they will read the Kids' Corner, I'm sure. They were stuck into that. That's funny.
So they would also run competitions with the local schools where you would design a Christmas card or something like that. And... again, nobody entered, so I would win every time, and you would get, I think first prize was £10, second prize was £5, and because nobody else entered, I would always win.
Yeah.
And then I would draw a card from my friends as well so that they could get second prize.
Oh my God.
So I had like £50 in my bank account.
That is crazy. That is so crazy. Do you think, were you, even from when you were really little, just making tons of stuff?
Yes.
Is it just part of just your DNA, basically?
Yeah, I just wanted to make the things that I loved. So I loved books, so I would get, I'd go into like my mom and dad's stationery cabinet. They didn't have a stationery cabinet. That makes it sound very fancy.
That sounds like
the cupboard
what
that
people
had the
in
old
America
notebooks
think
in.
English people have. Yeah, they went to the stationery
in the bureau.
Cupboard. Yeah.
Yeah. So if there was like an old like ring bound notebook or whatever, I would take that and then I would write a story in that fully written, fully illustrated. I gave a lot of them away to my friends. I would force my art and stories on my friends a lot. They'd be like, oh, good, another full-length story from Gemma.
That is so funny. And do you think that, what is your, I know that, I don't know, it might not apply to everybody, but what do you think your school, what's the takeaway education-wise in terms of like, I feel like even your church and your school clearly not like I feel like I didn't have those same outlets. Like I don't feel like people were looking for my potential and giving me outlets for things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it seemed like it had a big impact on you. Like, they're championing your spirit, this natural energy and stuff mm-hmm. that you're wanting to do. Is that true? What do you think was happening there?
Yeah, I think I was just lucky. The school I went to was pretty small.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of attention. And I think they basically couldn't stop me from drawing. So they were like, well, at least we can
channel it
into something productive. We had a school shop as well, and I kind of forced them to make the publicity department so that I could make posters.
Oh my god.
It was just like any opportunity I could find to transform a project into something where I could draw.
That's so good. And do you think you're, it sounds like you have, like, even from when you're little, you have a passion for books, printing, drawing, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all, so there's that part. And then there's also a part, it seems like, where you have a, I don't know if ambition or drive is the right word, but it's definitely something about, like, taking charge and, like, making things happen, like you're saying, you know. And I turned it into a publicity thing, and I said, here, I'll design your cards for your friends. And mm-hmm. do you think that, because I feel like you're an introvert, you're, you know, pretty quiet generally, like at least with new people. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe, I don't know behind the scenes, but, you know, we've only met a few times, but do you feel like an ambitious person?
Not really.
Okay.
I've never been very ambitious for anything that I haven't loved.
Right. So it's more passion than ambition.
It's very much just I have to do this.
Right.
Or I'll go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you grew up about the same time as me, and everyone, sports were very important. And, you know, I was very, very bad at sports.
Me too. Yeah.
So I really needed something to keep me sane.
Yeah. Yeah. I was the same. I mean, I was absolutely terrible at sports. I still am terrible. And my you know, it was like, it's such a bizarre experience to grow up. I grew up with a sports family. Mm. And I remember in like fourth grade, I decided to go do the basketball thing. And I made so many air balls. I don't think I scored the entire time. And no one would pass me the ball. And I was so embarrassed. And I hated it. But I just felt like this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know what an air ball is. It sounds like a good thing to me. I was
doing all kinds of air balls. No, it's where you throw the basketball and it doesn't hit the backboard, the net, anything. Just goes in the air onto the ground. And that was my special move.
Okay.
I still specialize in it, actually, when I play. Quick shout out to the sponsors. First of all, AstroPad. I get to sing AstroPad's praises every week because I'm an avid user and evangelist. Even if I wasn't getting paid to be so, I'm always spreading the word. So go check out AstroPad. You know, I've never been... you know, I feel like back in the day when I first started drawing digitally years ago, that it was, you know, kind of a dread to moving digitally. And even as I was kind of established drawing digitally, I kind of felt like it was a chore. I didn't get the same joy out of drawing on the computer as I did on paper. And I would say just in the past couple weeks, I have been so looking forward to drawing on my AstroPad. Just I feel like I've gotten to a groove with it, and I've been never been happier doing my digital drawing. So go, come on, if you haven't ever done that, I think it's a great way to get into it, getting an iPad and getting the AstroPad app. So go check it out at astropad.com. Also, one other sponsor we have is Wix.com. Now, I don't know what you know about Wix, but you don't know about this Wix. See, Wix, back in the day, Wix. I'm just saying that every time I say Wix, I get another dollar. That's how they pay me. Just kidding. sorry. Wix, here's the thing. Back in the day, Wix kind of had, I think Wix is just, they have pivoted. And they're doing amazing things in the creative space for creative people. And I think if you're tired of the same things happening online and you want some freedom and flexibility to kind of do whatever you want, I think Wix is an interesting option. And I think that if you go check it out, even if you've seen it in the past, that all this investment and all the things they're doing for creative people like you, I think are going to win your heart. So go check them out, wix.com/creativepep. I'm very open about things, and I tell everybody all of my secrets and all of my history, but growing up from before you know, all the way from when you're born to when you're going to college, are there things that you had to overcome, you know, things that were tough?
Yes. I mean, I was very quiet and surprisingly. I was very good at school. I did very well in every subject, with the exception of PE.
Okay.
So, you know what happens to people like that? They get bullied.
Yeah.
So, I loved school because I really always loved learning, but I got teased a lot, and, you know, I had glasses and short, bad hair. So, there were those things, but that just made me it made me withdraw, but I would use that in my art, and I would have a sketchbook with me all the time and make little diaries. I spend a lot of time in the library. You know, it's now looking back, it was good.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I didn't necessarily think that I wanted to spend all of my time and alone in the library.
Yeah, right. And so, and obviously that did channel into your journaling, into your drawing, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. Do you think that it's kind of strange? I feel like some people, I feel like I've always been kind of a passionate person with a lot of interests, but I feel like some people have a hard time. I have always kind of been jealous of you, and I feel like you have always had a really strong sense of who you are, even from when we first met online way back mm-hmm. in the day, in your tastes and interests. And is that something, I wonder if, do you think you've always had a clear sense of self?
I think I have, but I didn't necessarily see it that way. Back then, it was more just a sense of desperation that these are the things I have to do to stay sane. But I have always had a certain aesthetic. I've always had things that I like, which haven't changed that much since I was a kid.
Like dogs?
I was a cat person.
Oh, I know, you were. I know, yeah. I know that, yeah. I think I watched that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I still like cats, but I found pugs.
Are pugs different than dogs?
Pugs are cat-like in some ways.
Yeah.
They're definitely, they're dogs, but they're not dogs.
Right. My daughter, I told you this, my daughter is crazy about your dogs. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how it happened. She'll be three soon. Somehow she saw them on my Instagram and now she's crazy. And she basically, I told her that I'm going to see Mr. Pickles and Bella's mom, and she was kind of sad. She was feeling feelings when I said that. And and then when I left today, she's like, "Where are you going, Bella?" I said, "No, I'm not going to see the dogs, but I'll tell their mom, to say hi." So Alice says hi.
That's so sweet. Yeah.
She wants a pug really bad, but I don't know. I don't know if I can deal with dogs. But so let me ask you this. Do you feel like your art has been a tool of, I mean, you keep saying that it's been something that's helped you stay sane.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, but before I'm gonna come back to what I was originally gonna say. But do you stay sane? What does that mean for you personally? Like, what was it helping you do? What are you battling with it, or at least at the time?
Mostly anxiety. Being out in the world was scary for me because people was scary, and I had a lot of phobias as a kid. So drawing helped me kind of process everything in a way that I understood. I was never very good at speaking or even listening to teachers talking.
Yeah.
I would have to write everything down as it was being said to be able to process it. So I guess I guess that's the way I couldn't understand stuff unless I wrote it down or drew it.
Wow, that's really interesting. So do you feel like you would be, where do you think you would be, not even career-wise, but just mental health-wise or whatever, if you didn't have this resource throughout your life?
It's kind of hard to say because I just can't imagine it.
Yeah.
It's such a major part of my life. I mean, I, like I said, I did pretty well in school, so I probably could have done something else.
Yeah.
You know, I could have, I nearly became a teacher. I could have, you know, done science or gone to medical school or whatever. So, you know, I probably would have been okay, but I can't imagine how I would have got through life without being able to draw, at least as a hobby.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, sometimes I think about how I, so this is ridiculous, but I can't remember. I tried to go back and find this because it's a story I reference all the time. I can't remember if it's Bruce Springsteen that said it or what's his name? Louis Anderson. Do you know Louis Anderson? He's a comic. He's, have you ever seen Baskets? It's a new show.
Yes.
Okay, he's Zach Galifianakis' mom on the show.
Okay.
That's
yes.
Louis Anderson.
All right.
So they're very different. Bruce Springsteen and Louis Anderson. So it's so funny that I can't remember, but I remember hearing an interview with one of them, and they were talking about how both of their dads were alcoholics, and they both were like ended in, you know, their lives ended in not a good place.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that they felt like their art helped them process things, the same things that their dad their dads. I'm talking about it like they're both saying the same story, but one of them said it, and they just said that art was a tool for them, like music or comedy or whatever, for self-actualization, for dealing with their demons and their stuff.
Yep.
In a way that their dad didn't have an outlet or a way to ask these questions, to work through this. Do you feel like that's a similar thing for you? Like, do you feel that it's, do you feel like you've grown a lot since age 20? Like,
in some ways, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still, if somebody said that I couldn't draw anymore, I would be pretty adrift.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I can see that. I know that, you know, my mom struggles with anxiety, and she's not someone who draws. She probably doesn't think of herself as a creative person, although she, you know, she can sing, and she's a very smart person. But yeah, I mean, she doesn't have what I have.
Yeah.
And it's also a generational thing. I think we were a lot more encouraged as kids to do creative things, whereas when maybe our parents' generation was at school, it was a lot more, you need a practical job.
Yeah. So you just did a talk surrounding mental health stuff in Cincinnati. And do you, for any, even creative people or people that don't see themselves as creative, do you have any tips or tricks or whatever around making art to help you grapple with things like anxiety, depression? I know, you know, I'm not speaking about it like drawing is going to solve all of those problems, you know, and like
no.
It's some easy thing, but do you, what are things that help you or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously drawing is not going to solve everything, otherwise doctors would just prescribe drawing
yeah.
and everything would be great.
Yeah.
But for me, it's a process, but that's the way that my brain works, and not everybody processes things that way. Some people need to speak to
True.
Process.
Yeah.
But I do think that writing things down makes them more, they it visualizes things for you that you don't even necessarily know were a problem.
Mm.
when I'm drawing my sketchbook, I'm not thinking about other people seeing it, and I'm just doing it for myself. And I think people worry with art that they're not good at it, or they can't do it, and therefore they don't do it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, everybody can put a pen to paper and make a line, and you don't have to show anybody ever.
Yeah.
So I think that more people should be able to use art as a tool to help them, and they shouldn't feel like they have to show anyone. They shouldn't feel like it has to be good. I think we've got this thing ingrained in us from childhood that art is something fun and frivolous, and it's something you do at school when you don't want to be doing PE lessons.
Yeah.
And people feel guilty for making art because they think that they should be doing something more productive with their time. But, you know, I've always found that, well, I say always, it's only recently that I've gotten better at taking breaks and taking time out. And for me, that means doing yoga or something because I'm drawing all the time.
Yeah.
But just that time out really helps to clear your head. And, you know, if you're trying to solve a problem or come up with ideas, it's very easy to get very obsessive over trying to solve the problem, whereas it's actually more important to take the time out, clear your head, and that's when the problem's more likely to get solved.
True. I think even your brain works that way. Like, I think I've heard, you know, if you're struggling with a problem and grappling with it, and then you allow yourself to walk away, that your subconscious will work on it while you're taking a break, and that actually work on it better.
Yeah.
Do you, when you're journaling, writing versus drawing, do you, and I know you mix them, but does your brain work differently when you're, like, I wonder if you get different things out of doing one versus the other, because some people might even be used to journaling with their words, but not with drawing. Like, does that, do you find it gives you different things?
Not really, because I don't write much, you know, I don't write long sentences and paragraphs. It's all very little lists and little annotations. And so it's the way I've always drawn. And so it comes naturally to me. And, you know, occasionally I do write longer things, and that's different. That's very stream of consciousness, pouring everything out. Which is, the drawing as well is the same. It's like stream of consciousness. You know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
I feel I can be a little more poetic, I suppose.
Yeah.
When I'm writing in longer prose.
Yeah. And so this is the last one, I'm going to shift gears, but I was going to say, so do you think that art has been a tool for your own growth, though? Do you feel like you are further along on your journey with anxiety and by using art? If you didn't have it, do you think you would have more anxiety?
Yeah, I can't say for sure. Maybe I would have found something else.
Right,
and
true.
And art is not the only thing that I do. If it was, it was for a long time, and I didn't get rid of my anxiety. And, you know, it's also part of who I am. It's just my personality is to be a worrier.
Right.
But, yeah, without art, I would definitely struggle a lot more, for sure.
And do you think that it has helped you develop as a person, generally? I don't know if that makes sense as a question, but it's just kind of like, it seems to me, and I guess maybe I'll give you this before, so you kind of understand what I'm saying. It just seems to me that you come across as a very self-actualized person, and I think about how art seems to be a tool for doing that. Like, I know a lot of people that have a regular job that have never done any art, and I feel like they often don't really know who they are. Like, they don't really know what they like. they're super influenced. I mean, this is a judgment, and I'm not judging them per se, but just noticing that they're not aware of their real preferences. They're not aware of what the difference between them and their tribe is and all that kind of stuff. Whereas you seem like somebody who really has a sense of who you are, and I don't know, you definitely seem like you've been on a journey. Even from earliest times that we talked, I feel like you seem to have, not in a, I hope it doesn't sound condescending, it's not like I'm like, I'm really proud of your growth. It's more just like, you just seem like you've been on a long journey and come a long way, and
yeah,
I don't know. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm articulating it right.
I do. It's kind of funny you say that, because it's only really recently that I've felt like I've really embraced everything I really love and started to... I've always used things I love in my work.
Yeah.
But I've never felt confident enough to think that anybody else would care. Mm. Because there's certain things that I love. Like, I love medical history. And I never really used it in my work before, because I was like, people just want to see pugs and cats and nobody cares about this.
Yeah.
But recently I've made a few comics with that as a subject. I've realized that I can read books and that can feed into my work. I've allowed myself to like start collecting vintage like illustrations and posters, and you know, to really surround myself with things that I love that I didn't allow myself to do for quite a long time, because I felt like it was kind of selfish in a way.
Oh,
to, okay. I've never been good at buying things for myself.
Right.
But, you know, I can buy a really nice poster or something, and it's going to influence my work. Therefore, it's an okay purchase to make.
Which still is kind of a weird justification, in that you should be able to treat yourself without it.
Right.
Being profitable or being productive and useful. But yeah, I get it. I feel ya. I do a similar thing,
I've definitely tried to improve that since being in the US, actually. I feel like, I don't want to say the US is consumerist.
Making you...
but I've definitely felt like you can get whatever you want here.
True.
Whereas in England, I'd like look at stuff, but you know, like on Etsy or something, and be like, oh, but it's in America and the postage costs so much and I can't have it. And now I'm just like, I'm going to cover my walls in random like medical like
what is, labels. Talk more about the medical history thing, because I don't really even know what that, I mean, I kind of know, but what's the deal with that?
I mean, it's just literally, I'm just interested in...
is that me or you?
No, it's me.
That's all right.
Sorry, everybody. I'm just interested in history in general. I guess coming from a family where a lot of people worked in...
medical field.
In the medical field. It's something I've always been surrounded with. Like, my mum was a midwife. And
really?
Yes.
Oh,
I know your wife's a midwife, yeah?
She's not, but she was a doula.
Okay.
And she... thought about going to school to be a midwife, and she was really fascinated about that. Yeah,
my mom had this book about midwifery in the house that I would, as I said, I would just read anything, and it was very graphic. I opened it once, and it freaked me out.
Yeah,
but I only kind of recently really got into the medical history side of things, and I feel like it was my destiny to be interested in that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just a little too late to, I'm not at high school anymore and decide that I want to go to medical school or whatever.
Do you think it will have an impact on the work that you're, I mean, it sounds like it already has, but do you think
I always have a lot of ideas of things that I want to do. But I definitely have a lot of ideas for books and comics and zines that I want to make on that subject.
So when we first got started, you were, we were both kind of pitching for similar jobs in kind of the same world of like illustration, but at some point you at least partially shifted more hardcore into the direction of cartoons, being a cartoonist and comics and all that. How did that process all happen? Is that an accurate description of what happened?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, I can draw, but I'm not like an amazing artist, and illustration requires you to be a very good artist.
Right. I'm not going to co-sign that you're not a good artist, but okay.
But I rely on words to support my drawings. I find it difficult to do an illustration without adding any text in there.
I feel kind of similar, but I understand that, but yeah.
So I think it kind of happened naturally that I would try and put words in wherever I could, and then so people would see that and they would say, okay, so you like words, let's give you this assignment to do something with some text in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the more I did, the more I would get. And I started putting my work online that was kind of sketchbook stuff where I'd make little jokes or make little diaries.
Was this like Flickr days?
Yeah. And obviously social media has become massive, and people on social media, comics is the big thing. And I never started making comics for social media. I made them anyway. But right. I think I just was lucky to be in the right place at the right time.
Right. And did you, were you kind of aware at the time that there was a difference between illustration and doing comics?
Yeah. I mean, I went to school for illustration.
Right.
And I never, there was no cartooning degree that I knew of.
Yeah.
I never really considered that what I did myself, like what I drew in my sketchbooks for fun, was a serious career. And it wasn't until I got to art school, and I mean, obviously I'd seen Gary Larson, but I had no idea of how you would get to be that person.
Right.
But when I got to art school, we had a few visiting professors. We had some guys from Le Gun magazine come in, and they kind of introduced us to a lot of artists, people like Tom Gold, who were making their own comics. And I'd always already really loved making stuff.
Yeah.
I would sew stuff. And because I've always loved... my parents have always made fun of me because I love stuff. Like, right. If I go to a museum, I love the gift shop.
Me too, I'm like that.
And I've always just wanted to be able to make, in the same way that I wanted to make the books and the comics, I wanted to make stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm the same, like the ephemera, all the stuff around the thing, I'm all about.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
I actually just got back, I told you this, from Sweden, and there was Moomin stuff everywhere, and I brought back so much stuff, way more stuff than I should have bought, but I couldn't help it. I've never seen all this stuff, all this Moomin stuff.
Yeah.
I got, we jammed it. I got a giant stuffy, I got a ton of stuff anyway.
I don't know what it is. It's just seeing something applied to something new or different.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I should probably never go to Japan.
Me too. I will be the same. Yeah, like.
Crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's funny.
I can't remember what the original question was. I got really excited about stuff.
Me too. I don't know. I was just saying. But did you notice the switch and you were like, yeah, were you thinking of yourself as an illustrator at that time and then eventually kind of changed the way you thought of yourself?
That was because, as I said before, I'm from a kind of practical family where you get a proper job. Illustration was a proper job.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, something tangible. You do the illustrations for the magazine and you get paid kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took me a while to realize. I mean, when I was at art school, my professor did say to me, the stuff you're drawing in the sketchbooks is better than the stuff you're producing for briefs.
Yeah.
But I was just kind of like, oh, no, okay. Isn't that stupid? Yeah, like, right. It's just doodles. And it took me a long time to realize that that's what I should be doing, and that people, because I've never really shown anybody before, it was just something I'd always done.
I think there's a thing that is, so I'll say it this way. There's an analogy about, I don't even know what it's about, but here's what it is. It says there's a scientist fish, and he's like studying, and he discovers water. And then he goes and tells everybody all this stuff about water. And they're like, wow, amazing. We can't wait to see it. And they're like, yeah, you're swimming in it. It's like, you're, you know, it's everywhere, right? And I think your gift for a lot of people, their gift, what they do is like water. And that it's mm-hmm. like, for me, and okay, I get that anytime you're going to talk about your gift, it kind of sounds terrible, right? So every time I go to this place, I end up like stumbling because I'm like, maybe no one else thinks this is my gift, but I feel like something to do with talking is, which is also a dumb gift, I feel like, but like I would, you know, I feel like doing talks and doing, and illustration is a big part of what I do. I mean, it's the large part of my income and everything, and I do think it's part of my gift, but you know, I would be giving pep talks to individuals my whole life, and there was something, I feel like there's something, it just is coming out of me all the time, mm-hmm. right? Same as your journals, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a part of it that's like water where it's so hard to notice mm-hmm. just the stuff that is natural for you, that just yeah. comes out of you. And so do you think that shift from illustration to being a cartoonist was, even if it wasn't an aha moment, like one moment, was that switch a pretty big breakthrough for you?
Not really, because it happened very organically.
Slowly and organically.
Yeah, it just, you know, as you work and as you get more clients, you naturally get to do more of what you want to do because you're less desperate for jobs that you'll kind of do anything. And so I was finding that I was getting to do a lot more of more comic type stuff because that's what I wanted.
But was it a breakthrough to see how strongly people were responding to that online? Was that a breakthrough?
Yeah, I would say that would be a breakthrough.
Because you were sharing illustration alongside of it, and you know, lots of pictures as well as all of your
and stuff. Yeah, the kind of comic joke stuff was the most popular, which it would be. You know, that's what people.
But like, but maybe you didn't know that at the time, right? Like, I mean, earlier days in the internet, you're sharing all this stuff. We didn't have memes and all
right.
that.
Right, we did not have memes.
Yeah. Not to call your work memes.
In the olden
I know that is, I've heard you talk about that and I get it. But yeah, we didn't know the internet wanted this,
mm-hmm.
right?
You know?
And so I'm guessing as you're uploading all these things, I guess what I'm alluding to is just that you have to be aware of how what's working and kind of working out, like, what do I do and like what do people mm-hmm. want from me and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Anyway, so let me ask you this question. I want to ask you a different kind of question. What do you think makes for a good cartoon?
A twist.
Okay.
Yeah, something unexpected. Taking something and pairing it with something completely different, or making it very predictable until the very last moment and then twisting it.
Yeah. And that and stand-up comics would say a really similar thing, right? So do you let me ask you this. Do you use that idea purposefully when you're making stuff, like you're doing that on purpose? Like how does that work? Because I do similar things with like analogies, and in my talks I try to do a twist at the end a lot of times, but I wonder in your process whether you're commanding that, like, does that make sense?
I would say that I am, because I love to study, and I like to have a subject for my comics, and my husband always says, you just made 10 comics in one. Like, I make 10 jokes in one comic, where someone would use just that one joke.
Yeah. For instance, like your a good example of that is probably your sexy Halloween costumes.
Right.
Where you do like 10 of them instead of
Like someone else would just do one of them, but I always think, but that one might not be funny. I need to have 10, so at least one of them is going to be actually funny.
And then I do notice, like, maybe you put the zinger at the end.
Yeah.
The best one is usually the
punch,
last one.
It's the punchline.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I like to have a subject, and I like to... So, for example, the last comic I did for the Nib was about dog shows.
Okay.
So... it's either because the timing's right, because it was the Westminster Dog Show just now, or it's something that I just read about and I want to make a comic about.
So you chose the topic, yeah?
Yes.
Right, okay.
So I'll be like, well, I want to make a comic about dog shows. What is it about dog shows that's funny? The names are funny. The dog names are funny.
Yeah.
And then thinking about dog shows as pageantry, and then I get to research beauty pageants.
Yeah,
like, the more research I can do, the better.
Yeah,
so I'm like, okay, now I get to go on the internet and read about beauty pageants.
Right.
And the reasons that you might get disqualified for a beauty pageant.
Right.
So, I did was...
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but...
That's okay.
You did a thing right there, like the reasons you get disqualified. How did you come upon thinking that? Because that's even a few leaps... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, just kind of, I like to think around a subject a lot and think of every possible angle that I could take and what would be something a little dark, or, you know, less like just this is your talent, and I would think about that as well. I would have a couple of sketchbook pages where I just think this all through on paper. And
that's the other question I was going to ask you, of whether this is happening in your head or...
No, it's
what's
on
it
paper.
Look like when you're brainstorming? Is it lists? Is it drawings and lists? Is it...
It's
with
both.
The research? Yeah.
Yeah. I love having a new sketchbook page and writing the subject at the top, and then just reading stuff and writing everything down, doodling on the side. And then once I've got that idea down, so I've kind of thought, what would be the funniest... reasons for disqualification from the dog show would be funniest. Then I can start thinking of the actual comic and what's going to go in it.
Right.
I mean, that comic I basically did because I wanted to include my pug in it.
Right.
And it was an opportunity.
Was this a photoshopped one?
Yes.
Clearly photoshopped, yeah. That was good. That's funny. And so did... And I get that we are dissecting the thing to a hell, but for me, I find it fascinating, and I like to kind of figure out what's happening in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
I try to do it to myself so that I can repeat it, you know, kind of understand, like, how did that moment click? And so how did that one come about when you realized, oh, I'll go with the Photoshop joke?
That was, a lot of the time I have the one joke that I like, that I want to use, but I'm not sure how I want to use it.
Like you knew you wanted to do something about being photoshopped.
Yeah, right. And I have done a joke before about that. I used to do a Sky Cats comic for Emirates Airline magazine. Yeah, and it was, I think the one cat says, "What happened to you?" And the other cat says, "Photoshop," and it's a photo of a cat. And, you know, I just like that joke and I wanted to make it again.
Yeah.
That's so good. A lot of the time I'll build the whole comic around one joke that I want to make.
Yeah.
And I'll have to... It might just be a pun. It might just be like a really bad pun. And I'm like, oh, but I love it. So I need to think of more puns.
Or right.
I need to think of more jokes around this subject and build it up from there.
Okay.
And, you know, I could just use that one pun and just make a comic out of that like a normal person.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, like this kind of obsession, natural obsession to, because I'm, it seems like to me, how much drawing do you do that, like what percentage of drawing do you show the world versus what you do?
Yeah, not much.
Right.
So
what do you think? Take a random guess of what the percentage is.
5%.
You show 5%?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, by the way, to most people, I mean, I draw a lot. I think people think I draw a lot. I definitely don't draw as much as you. And I think, but I show a lot too. I show a lot more than probably you do. But I feel like people already think that you're crazy prolific.
Yeah.
So if they only knew what drawing you're doing. But I think that's part of the secret of like the reason, you know, there's a lot of people doing puns and stuff online. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the reason why yours are transcending the general memes and puns and stuff, not to call your work memes. I didn't. That's not what I meant.
For the second time.
Sorry. It's like in my brain, I'm like, don't say the word memes. And I say it two times. But I feel like there's definitely something of mastery going on there where you're literally willing to explore this thing so in so many different avenues mm-hmm. that you're going to get a better joke and you're going to get, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, not necessarily because I pick something, but that may not be the best joke.
The funniest thing.
I'm not always the best judge of what people will like. It's usually the thing that I think is
the
worst.
Do you rely on your husband for some of that feedback?
He's very helpful.
Does he think you're crazy with the amount of stuff you draw?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he does because he's always seen me doing
it.
It's, you know, I can draw at the same time as watching TV or whatever, so it's not like I'm squirreled away in my studio.
Yeah. But do you have like boxes and boxes and boxes of sketchbooks?
I have quite a few. I lost a lot of them when we moved to the US. We sent a box. We left some stuff at my husband's sister's house, and then she shipped them with a parcel company, and one of the boxes got lost.
Oh my gosh.
Which had a few of my sketchbooks in.
Were you gutted?
I can't really remember what was in them.
Okay.
So if I don't think about it, then it's fine.
Okay, sorry. All right. That's really good. And I, one of the things I try to like, I've been talking to people about with the podcast is having a definition of good, like you saying good comics have a twist. I do think that knowing what your definition is really helpful in hitting that target. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The last thing I want to talk to you about was, and I have no idea how long we've been talking. This could be days, but there's one other thing I want to talk about.
It's still light outside.
It's still light. Is you just hit 500,000 followers on Instagram, which is insane.
Insane.
Bigger than lots of celebrities, like actors and people, right? Like massive following. And I wonder, I would love to hear what, from your perspective, because so many creative people think that they want that, right? I'd love to hear first what's genuinely good about it, because I do think it there's all kinds of benefits, genuinely, even though we want to write it off, and then what's genuinely bad about it?
I mean, genuinely good is obviously that my work gets seen by a lot of people that wouldn't necessarily see it otherwise. It's been hugely helpful to me for finding clients, for selling products. I've been on Instagram for quite a long time, so I think I've just had a lot of time to build the audience up. I mean, social media in general, as much as I love to bitch about it, it's been very helpful, and I don't know where I would be without it. But it's not, if Instagram was to go away tomorrow, to be honest, I'd be quite relieved.
Really?
Yeah, it's there are a lot of negatives about social media, both work-wise and personal-wise. I really try hard not to use it too much. I've kind of instituted a thing where I post in the morning and then I put my phone away and don't look at it again for the rest of the day, because you can get very obviously distracted.
Yeah.
Also, there's this kind of feeling of things being very throwaway with social media. And it's like, I like to spend a lot of time on my comics, and they're something that I like to do, and I would like to have some longevity. And a lot of the time, I think on social media, it's like people are just flicking past stuff, and they want a quick joke.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what stuff is going to do well on Instagram.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't want to just post that stuff. I do want to post some of the comics that I actually really love and enjoyed making, even though I know that people won't love it as much as a pug pun.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with that information? Do you just sometimes post stuff you know is not going to work?
Yeah. I just post both.
Yeah.
I give the people what they want. Yeah. But you know, there's always some people who do want the longer stuff and the you know, the more obscure things. I guess I do use social media the way that it's meant to be used. So I do target stuff to people, and I've made some jokes and stuff that I probably wouldn't have made without it.
Yeah.
You know, just
yeah.
I might have put them somewhere and buried in the middle of a diary, but it wouldn't be like the meme, you know.
Yeah. And I feel like in art we have actually this myth or this kind of this self-serving attitude of like the only right art is stuff that's just for you. Mm-hmm. But you apply that to any other business or any other part of your life, and the exact opposite is true. Like, mm-hmm. if you, anything else you want to do with your time, if you're like, guys, don't worry, I'm just doing this for me.
Yeah.
Like, well, okay, you're a jackass then. Like, why is art the one thing that you're not actually allowed to serve anybody else? Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's weird. Like,
yeah, if you're making people happy or feel something, then surely that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think, I commend you for doing that. And I think, so on the genuinely bad, without going off the deep end, so I'll just say I have a tiny fraction of the following that you do on Instagram, and I just slowly over time mine has grown, not Instagram but just my career and people seeing what I do, slowly just grown over 10 years, just mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot more than it was 10 years ago, and for me, I'm sensitive. I don't have I wouldn't say that I have an anxiety disorder. I've had anxiety in the past that was heavy, but I am sensitive and mm-hmm. I am emotional, and I did a post recently about how I thought that getting seen would be the reward, and it ended up being the cost of mm-hmm. of building a successful career. And the more people that I know listen to the podcast, the more people I know that see my work, the more anxiety I have about it, about the vulnerability and all of that. So I can't imagine on the scale of people that are seeing you, what, especially someone who already has a predisposition to anxiety, what that must be like.
To be honest, it's all very abstract for me. I don't really think about those people. It would be the same however many followers I had.
Right, okay.
I can't. The only time when it bothers me is when I get, you know, the one person who is rude or sends me a death threat or whatever.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, it makes no real difference to me, the following.
Yeah, maybe the reason why it's bugged me is that it's, you know, I think maybe if it's the really anonymous people, it's easier mm-hmm. to just take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
But I feel like maybe because mine is built into the industry, like a lot of my followers are people that are people I know.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever feel like someone is, I don't know, saying something hurtful,
mm-hmm.
it hurts me. So anyway, I just can't imagine having that many people see what you do and carrying the weight of that. But
yeah, I mean, the people who are rude or hurtful are usually people I don't know, and you know, it can be upsetting, but I'd be a lot more hurt if it was someone I knew.
Yeah. Yep.
Saying something.
Right. All right. Well, do you have anything that you are? Do you have anything that you're working on now that you want to plug or talk about or throw out there?
I'm working on a graphic novel. I was probably working on it last time I did this podcast too.
So it's a big one.
So, you know, that may come out in another 10 years.
So look out. Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, look out for that.
Can you say what it's about?
It's about anxiety.
Okay. I think last time we talked, you were saying that you were thinking about doing it without pictures.
Yeah, I am going to use pictures. It's just going to be less individual single panel comics and more of a narrative.
Right.
So more like the diaries I make.
Yeah.
But it's going to be more specific about a specific time in my life, like a memoir.
Oh, okay.
I just need to find time to do it.
Is it more serious?
It'll be semi-serious. There'll still be jokes in there.
Yeah, right. That's good.
Yeah. But, you know, apart from that, I'm just doing the same old thing.
Doing your thing. Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for doing this. I super enjoyed it.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Gemma, thanks for being on the show. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I know that you don't do a lot of these things, a lot of podcasts and stuff like this, and means a lot to me to have you on the show. It was awesome to hear about some of your childhood stuff that I didn't know about, and just big, big, big thanks. I really appreciate it, and I hope that we run into each other again. I wish we would have taken a photo of us together, and I forgot to do that because I was just enjoying the moment. And man, it's just been so great to come up alongside Gemma and watch her career explode and unfold into so many great things. And, you know, I think she's doing a lot of important work for creative people, addressing a lot of feminine issues and a lot of, I don't know if feminine issues is the right word. I don't know, but all I know is that I think she's put herself out there in the feminist world quite a bit, and she's got a lot of flack from it. And I think she's normalized a lot of, you know, things like periods, things that are, you know, half the population deal with and that are completely normal. Man, I'm just going off on a tangent here, but I just think she's doing important work, and she's done a bunch of stuff. She's been really open about her struggles with anxiety, and I bet she doesn't even know how much of an impact she's made. And I'm grateful to have her in this world. Grateful for her to be in the CPT catalog 2 times now. Thanks, Gemma. Okay, woo! Another episode in the bag. Dudes, I am really, really looking forward to the rest of this series. We're just getting started, and I would say I've probably never had this much positive feedback on anything that we've done, and I'm so happy to hear it because this is some of my this is content that I've literally been hammering away at and working on for the past 3 years and been trying to tweak it and figure it out, and I've had some big breakthroughs, and it's just all authentic and legit. There's no posturing. This 7-step process isn't a thing that I thought up in an afternoon and thought that'll make a good podcast series. This is like, I feel like, and I know this isn't, I speak in hyperbole all the time, I know, but I really think this is like potentially some of my biggest life's work, and I'm crazy about it. I think it has potential to give you a roadmap to break through and be a catalyst for real progress. And so I'm excited to be sharing it with you. Next week we're going to talk about steps 2 and 3, which are the market and the niche, and this might be the most secretiest, sauciest part of the process. There's just a little perspective and things that happen in steps 2 and 3 that I think are I kid you not, I think that they are game changers, and they are for me on a regular basis. I go back to these and use them over and over, these ideas, and they give me clarity and help me to move forward. So anyway, sorry guys, I know this isn't that episode, but I'm just really pumped about it, and I'm just trying to make you understand how important it is to me. Anyway, all right, here we go. Thanks for listening. If you love Creative Pep Talk and it's done something for you emotionally, for your creative career, anything, if you want to give back, then there's a few things you can do. Some of them are super easy. Some of them are a little bit more challenging. One of them is you can review the show on iTunes. You can back it financially. You can be like one of the producers of the show at patreon.com/creativepeptalk. You can get some CPT merch, a little give and take action at creativepeptalk.com/shop. And you can get access to the first 100 episodes and stay up to date with new episodes by signing up to the newsletter at creativepeptalk.com. And you'll never miss all the Creative Pep Talk action. Thanks for listening. Hey, thanks to Yoni Wolf, my man, for the theme music and the band, his band Y, for the beautiful music that you hear at the start of this podcast. Thanks to Nate Utesh and his band, Metavari. You can find out more about Metavari at metavari.com, M-E-T-A-V-A-R-I.com. Thanks to Alex Sugg. He is the part of the Creative Pep Talk team that, who knows, might grow, might not. Might just be me and him hanging out. Well, me and him and Sophie. Sophie's my wife. She's deeply involved in the podcast, whether you know it or not. But Alex Sugg, he edits the podcast. He provides some tunes for the podcast, and we love him for that. So thanks, Alex. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. I hope that this episode fuels you to overflowing and gets you through another week to invest, to stack up more work in this direction, leading you to your creative career sweet spot. Until next week, when you're back on E and you need a little bit more CPT juice. Until then, stay pepped up.